The ancient Israelite kingdom of David and Solomon was monumental and majestic. Archaeology says so. Learn about the world premiere of an unprecedented exhibit at Armstrong Auditorium in Edmond, Oklahoma, that puts together all the pieces of this lost kingdom.
As I mentioned earlier, our institute is named after the late Herbert W. Armstrong, the popular author, educator, and humanitarian, and a warm friend of Israel and its archaeology. When Mr. Armstrong died in 1986, our next speaker picked up his mantle. Today, he continues Mr. Armstrong's work and legacy in Jerusalem, in Israel, and globally. He is a longtime student of the Bible and biblical history. He has authored and published more than 50 books on biblical figures and biblical history. He too loves Jerusalem and spends as much time in this beloved city as he can. He is the founder and chancellor of Herbert W. Armstrong College and the founder and chairman of the Armstrong Institute of Biblical Archaeology. And he provided the vision behind our exhibit. To deliver the keynote address this afternoon, please welcome Mr. Gerald Flurry.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Well, greetings to all of you and welcome to the best exhibit we've ever had. And this is really spectacular. My history does go back quite a way into Mr. Armstrong's college, Ambassador College. And I started there in 1967. And some of you, I'm sure, remember that history, most of you. That was the year of Israel's six-day war with the Arab nations. And the Jewish nation, of course, captured the old city of Jerusalem. And that brought Mr. Benjamin Mazar and Mr. Armstrong together. What they did was the most significant excavation ever undertaken in Israel, and there had been nothing like it before. They began what most of them call the Big Dig. Later on, Mr. Armstrong, of course, and Mr. Mazar were gone. They were close friends, and Mr. Armstrong said it was a great honor when he was able to be a part of that Big Dig, and we too look upon this as being a great honor, really a responsibility to help in this great project. Benjamin Mazar said this, "Pour over the Bible again and again, for it contains within it descriptions of genuine historical reality." And then, of course, he passed that on to his granddaughter. And she, too, followed that example. I want to just refer to one psalm and a few verses today from the Bible that I think is very important, and it is about digging into the dirt and the stones. And I want to read this from the Jewish Publication Society of America Bible according to the Masoretic Text. This is a psalm about biblical archaeology, and it's also about a coming of the Messiah attached to that. Two subjects here. And I was just recently studying into this, and I think there's quite a lot here that we need to understand. Here's what it says. "But you, O Lord, sit enthroned forever, and your name is unto all generations. You will arise and have compassion upon Zion, for it is time to be gracious unto her, for the appointed time is come. For your servants take pleasure in her stones and love her dust." That would be the biblical archaeology. and these are God's servants, he says here. That's what this is about, God's servants getting into this biblical archaeology. Verse 16 says, so the nations will fear the name of the Lord, and all the kings of the earth your glory, when the Eternal, or the Lord, has built up Zion, when he has appeared in his glory. Oh, and he's going to appear in his glory. Now, if you're talking about the Messiah coming, well, you know you're in the latter days, and that this is talking about the latter days. That is a part of the appointed time, as we read there. People have a lot of different reasons for why they're into archaeology, and that's certainly fine. Well, they can do whatever they want, but I will have to say, always I have had a different reason and cause in archaeology than most people. But if you look closely at Psalm 102, it's not just about biblical archaeology, it's about God's biblical archaeology. Not biblical archaeology, but God's biblical archaeology in Psalm 102. This is something that ends with the coming of the Messiah. Now, that's what it says in the Hebrew Bible. Quite a few people are aware of that coming. One time, Herb W. Armstrong said that this coming of the Messiah is the greatest event ever to occur in the universe. We are talking about something that's huge in importance. It's obvious that you could say, well, okay, the deeper you get into this, the deeper the vision is you have, and the more you understand it, and the more excited you are about it. And it's not something that's insignificant at all. This is like a super monumental vision of hope. I don't care how bad it gets, and there will be serious problems in this end time, and it is the end time. That psalm makes it clear, but this is a vision of hope. There really is a great hope if you follow through on this archaeology. When I look back on Dr. Lot Mazar and all of her discoveries and her artifacts, you just don't find anybody that's found what she has in the city of Jerusalem. And I think that's significant, because if you know that that city is yet to be chosen, and I think you know by whom. But here, I believe that certainly that this all fits into God's plan, and I think God had a plan and a part in helping Lot Mazar do what she did. And we worked with her about a decade, and she was a unique person. You just didn't find people quite like her doing archaeology. And we learned so much from her. And she was just a marvelous teacher. But I want to go back to verse 14. I wanted to show you these two subjects that are covered here in these verses. It says in verse 14, you will arise and have compassion upon Zion. And there he leads on into the pleasure in her stones and dust and so on. But then if you go down to verse 17, it says, when the Lord has built up Zion. And that's tied to the coming of the Messiah. Essentially, they're saying the same thing. As you look at this more, as you get into it, you see, well, these two subjects are really tied together, unusually tied together, that I noticed just recently. Why are they so tied together? Biblical archaeology and the coming of the Messiah. Well, it's really God's biblical archaeology, and the coming of the Messiah is brought into all of this. It is something where in the Hebrew Bible you can certainly see these truths And these two subjects are tied together, and there even is another way they're sort of tied together. Let's look at verse 17, where it says, when the Eternal has built up Zion, when he has appeared in his glory. See, they're both subjects are in one verse, and it ties these two together. It ties them together. Both are subjects tied together. God's biblical archaeology and the coming of the Messiah. So these two subjects are just really close. And why is that? Well, there's a reason if you tie these two together. Here you are in the latter days, and God says, this is the appointed time. God makes it very clear that this psalm is going to make really easy to understand in this appointed time. And it is a time in the latter days. You know it is when the Messiah is coming. You know that's in the last days, and certainly there is a lot of trouble before that, and we know about that. But there is a hope that just overwhelms everything if you look at what this is really talking about. It's inspiring and moving, like it's the greatest event that's ever occurred in the universe. That certainly inspires me. I want to read something that Dr. Mazar said about the ancient structures in Jerusalem. She said this, I am interested in history, not just about stones. I am interested in stones that can speak. I don't care about stones that have nothing to talk about, that are speechless. Who cares about speechless stones? You don't hear too much talk like that, but she said, let the stones speak. She often said that time and time again. These servants take pleasure in the stones. And the more you understand about the coming of the Messiah, the more you're going to be excited about those stones. The servants take pleasure in them. And the love being in the dust because of that vision that we all need in this life, that hope that we all need in a hopeless world. And it is real, and the reality becomes clearer and clearer and motivating like nothing else could motivate you. Let the stone speak. Does that sound odd, to let the stone speak? Well, if you look at this psalm, God himself says the stones are speaking. God himself says these stones are speaking. So this is not just an archaeologist saying that. This is a big, big, big subject. And the more we get into it, the more you see it, and I've been in it a long time, starting way back in 1967 when I went to college anyhow, and even started earlier than that. But we know there are some rough times coming, because that is in the Hebrew Bible in several places, maybe a little very many ones about what happens just before the coming of the Messiah. The vision just continues to grow. Look at verse 22. We still have one more verse I want to mention here. That men may tell of the name of the Lord in Zion and his praise in Jerusalem. If you look at this in the context here, you'd have to say, well, God is putting emphasis on what's happening in Jerusalem. That is important, because when the Messiah comes, he's going to sit on David's throne in Jerusalem. So I think that makes sense, and it's logical that it would be that way. Now, we know there are many other biblical archaeologists that do outstanding discoveries all over Israel. I'm not trying to say they don't. They certainly do, and for many other reasons, and some of them are just truly outstanding. But I'm just saying, in this context, it does seem to me in every way that God says, well, put the emphasis on Jerusalem, and that's where Elat Mazar really rises and shines. Nobody compares to what she has achieved, as far as I'm concerned. They just simply have not. And she's been in a very rich place to dig. It even goes on to say in the Hebrew Bible, it talks about planning the heavens, the universe. This work from Jerusalem is going to be reaching out into the universe and to everything there is. And it's the most exciting and wonderful vision and work that you could ever understand, as I see it. And I've been looking at it for a long time. So both of these come at the same time. And the second one, well, if you want to see something about the coming of the Messiah, you can find probably 100 times in the, or even more than that, in the Hebrew Bible. But I want to read to you something here that was written about Elat Mazar. This was in a 2005 article from Rachel Ginsburg. She recognized the significance of Dr. Mazar's Palace of David discovery. This is royal. God is royal, and he wants to make all of us royal. We are created for that. That's common knowledge. But here's what she said about Dr. Mazar. Dr. Elat Mazar, world authority on Jerusalem's past, has taken King David out of the pages of the Bible and put him back into living history. Mazar's latest excavation in the city of David, in the southern shadow of the Temple Mount, has shaken up the archaeological world. If you see that and you begin to see, look, the stones are shouting aloud. I mean, they're really speaking. And oh, what a message this all leads to. That's what the psalm is all about and what God really wants us looking to David and learning from him. Let the stones speak. We all need to come into this living history and bring everything alive in the Bible. Dr. Elat Mazar and her grandfather were going around with a Bible in their hand and being guided by that history. And look at what all the Dr. Mazar discovered. She taught us so much. I mean, she knew about digging for artifacts and discoveries, and did she ever find a large number of them? And you'll see that in this exhibit. And we hope you'll really look at it closely and look into David's life. Here he has the longest biography in all the Bible, as far as the Jewish Bible is concerned. So when David came in, he really conquered the Jebusites. They were in Jerusalem, really. There had been great men of God been there before. And so David fought for God. And he fought like nobody in Israel, it seems, when it comes to bloodshed. He really did love God. He made his mistakes. He turned his life around. And he has a great, great reward in the near future. Dr. Mazar talked about David's palace being attached to that stepstone structure. You'll see that out there and certainly understand it in our book that we will be making available to you, but she talked about the two structures were part of the same construction was an astonishing discovery for us. Laid before our very eyes was a structure massive in proportions and innovative in complexity. This is a royal palace. And notice what she says about the builders. It bears witness to the impressive architectural skill and considerable investment of its builders, to the competency of a determined central ruling authority, and most notably, to the audacity and vision of that authority. David was audacious, bold, and what faith that man had. And even as a teenager, you know those stories and you can read about them in the literature that's available for free. Dr. Mazar talked about that just a stepstone to help support that palace was as high as a 12-story building. You think maybe, you see, if you have something like that and in the palace on top of that, the stones really do speak. Let the stones speak. They have a lot to say. Dr. Mazar believed that she was only 20% into that dig of David's palace. But here was a royal warrior king who fought battles time and time and time again to make everything ready so it could be peaceful for his son, Solomon. So there was one of those walls was 10 feet wide, and then another one was 16 feet wide. This is real engineering. When you look back to the 10th century, it was a palace fit for a royal warrior king. And oh, how he led Israel and is going to lead them in the future. What a future that will be. See, these palace stones are speaking, and it's all about royalty. All about royalty. So you can find out a lot about that in this exhibit, I'll tell you. She talked about just this all became one massive edifice for David, king of Israel. And then she said, quote, "There may be times when it will take 10 years for people to readjust to, support, or even accept the idea. But I'm not going to wait for them." I like that. She was a lady in a big hurry, and she just kept moving ahead in spite of the critics, and there were plenty of those. But she had that spirit of David in many ways, and she was not waiting for anybody. She said, okay, maybe 10 years later they'll get what I'm talking about, but I can't wait for them. And she knew she had to move fast to get this work done. And she really, really helped to bring David alive. So when you, again, looking at what this lady uncovered, and I don't have time to get into all of the artifacts and the discoveries, but you can get all that in the exhibit. And I tell you, if you get the facts there, you're going to be moved by that. And it is something to behold. And it's something to be excited about. And it's something to be inspired about. And it's breathtaking when you realize what God is talking about here in his biblical big dig that he has, his wonderful work that he's going to give to all of this world. But I just am very thankful to be here with all of you. And this is something that is in many ways a unique project, but it's something that is for everybody. When you're talking about the coming of the Messiah, you're not talking about just Jerusalem or Israel. You're talking about the whole world. That is coming. It's coming. And it's something we need to have that'll just sort of overflow everything in the picture that we have in our minds. And we need to etch that vision into our minds. And I'll tell you, it will motivate you as nothing else ever has.
Oh. All our literature is available free of charge at no cost or obligation to you. Request Archaeology Thunders, Behold Your God, a special issue of Let the Stone Speak, and a trumpet subscription. Order now. The preceding program was a paid presentation of The Key of David, brought to you by the Philadelphia Church of God.